Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We are here on case 2018-1431, Donna Lunsford et al. Versus Sterilite of Ohio, LLC et al. For the appellant, Mr. Rodari?
Yes, Your Honor. Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, Daniel Rodari of Brennan, Manna, and Diamond on behalf of appellant Sterilite of Ohio. I'm joined at the appellant's table today by Joshua McCloskey of Western Heard on behalf of co-appellant U.S. Health Works. We will be splitting our time this morning. I will take the initial 6 minutes of the total 15. Mr. McCloskey will take the remainder, and hopefully, if all goes according to plan, we'll have 3 minutes left for rebuttal. Affirming the judgment of the Fifth District Court of Appeals will send the message to Ohio employers that no matter how carefully, how professionally, or how privately a direct observation urinalysis screening is conducted, the very act of performing that test will give rise to unlimited exposure in the form of individual and even class action lawsuits on behalf of at-will employees who do not have a reasonable expectation of privacy in whether they are reporting to work under the influence of drugs or are cheating on a drug test.
Counselor, is it that test or that test the way it's administered?
Yes, and that's the question this case presents, Your Honor, and I'm glad you brought it up at the beginning, because I think we need to properly frame the question. The question is not, as the Fifth District held in its opinion below, whether the appellees have a reasonable expectation of privacy in the act of urination generally. We all agree they do. Every court that has upheld direct observation at the Sixth Circuit and in other jurisdictions has said that they do. The question is whether they have a reasonable expectation of privacy in the act of furnishing a urine sample for a drug test. And I think if we use a simple hypothetical, we understand why framing the question that way gets us to a very different result than the Fifth District reached in its decision below.
But that isn't the issue here, though, is it really? Because was there any objection to providing a urine specimen, urine sample?
According to the complaint, there was not. None of the appellees are alleged to have made any contemporaneous objection as they were selected for the test or as they furnished a urine sample. Indeed, the complaint alleges that two of the appellees attempted over the course of 2.5 hours to furnish a urine sample under direct observation, made no complaint about it, didn't refuse to take the test. And there are a number of jurisdictions across the country, including the Supreme Court of Alaska, in the Ludke decision that's cited in our brief, holding that the very act of furnishing a urine sample obviates any objection an employee might have to the nature or the manner of the test, because at the end of the day, we're dealing with an at-will employment relationship. And this court has held many times that the employer may change the terms and conditions of an at-will relationship at any time. And the remedy of a disaffected employee is to refuse or to quit. And I think it's important to note at the onset.
So could an employer say to an at-will employee that you have to supply a urine sample in the center of the workplace with everyone watching?
Absolutely not, because that and the reason why I respond that way, Your Honor, is because there's no legitimate business interest for an employer to make that kind of demand of an employee. That's the scenario that the Northern District of Ohio addressed in the Feliciano case in 1994. Which is cited in our brief. It was a Fourth Amendment case, not a common law privacy case. But the district court noted that that's what the, in that case, the City of Cleveland police cadets were being asked to do. And Judge Aldrich, in her opinion, said this was not a case where they were being asked to furnish a urine sample in front of an independent third-party medical technician, which is exactly what happened here.
But what's the business interest in the urine specimen the way it's collected under this scenario?
The legitimate business interest is ensuring the integrity of the test.
But what was their prior information about these particular employees that would indicate that they would not supply a urine test under honest circumstances?
According to the complaint, there was not. And obviously under the standard of review,
so why couldn't they just provide the urine specimen in the privacy of a restroom and have someone standing out in the restroom waiting for them to come out of the stall? I mean, had they falsified one in the past? Had one been accused of using drugs in the past? Is there anything other than simply, we're going to watch you take it?
Sure. There's nothing in the complaint that alleges that any of the appellees attempted to falsify or cheat on a test
prior. So what's the business interest?
The business interest is ensuring that employees are not cheating on tests, and we don't need to have reasonable suspicion or probable cause before we do that.
Why?
because the Sixth Circuit and other courts have routinely held that those are Fourth Amendment concepts that simply don't apply in the context of private at-will employment. Indeed, the Fifth District in its Sack versus Detroit Diesel Corporation decision said that an employer does not need to...
But why does at-will employment matter here? Let's say these employees were under contract, and there was nothing in their contract about the way they would have to provide urine samples, just, you know, you're going to work for this term at this pay rate.
Well, I think the distinction that at-will employment creates is that there's no Fourth Amendment interest. And these concepts of reasonable suspicion and probable cause that permeate the allegations and the complaint at issue in this case all arise from the Fourth Amendment. And it's interesting to note that the complaint that is before this court, the complaint that controls the analysis under Rule 12b-6, focuses almost exclusively on these Fourth Amendment concepts of reasonable suspicion and probable cause. And those things don't have anything to do with the private employer's ability, as this court said in its decision in Ohio, State X Rel Ohio AFL-CIO versus Ohio Bureau of Workers' Compensation 2002 decision of this court, employers can set forth their own drug testing procedure for purposes of exposing employee misconduct. There doesn't need to be reasonable suspicion or probable cause before an at-will private
employer. Also, was this a uniform policy, not just for these four people, but for all of the employees of this company?
That is correct. The employer in this case, Sterilite, made the decision to transition to direct observation in or around October of 2016. When these drug tests first occurred. And this was uniformly applied to everyone in the plant, not just to these four appellees.
And were they the first to have their drug test under this new observation policy?
You know, the complaint is unclear about whether they were the first, but it does allege that these tests spanned a period of 2 months in October and November of 2016. So the four appellees in this case were each individually tested over a two-month period of time. Whether others were tested in an intervening period, I think, is unclear from the face of the complaint. But at the end of the day, none of them objected to it.
Counsel, and each of, yes, Your Honor. Finish your sentence.
No one objected to it. And quite simply, the allegation that each of these employees was required to furnish a urine sample under direct observation in the presence of a private third-party medical technician in a sex-specific setting does not give rise to a scenario such as that contemplated under Hausch versus Peth, the lead case in 1956 establishing the contours of invasion of privacy in this state. In that case, this court addressed a situation where a debt collector initiated a systematic campaign of harassment against a debtor. There's no allegation that anything akin to that happened here. And the district court decision in the Norris case, it's the Sixth Circuit 2011 published decision we cite in our brief, the district court decision from Kentucky analyzed a common law invasion of privacy claim. Interestingly, the Fifth District, I think in a rush to distinguish Norris below, held that Norris only dealt with the Fourth Amendment. That's not true. Norris analyzed a common law invasion of privacy claim as well.
Counselor, two things. One, was your client required to consider or employ a less intrusive means? And two, what difference does it make that it's a medical technician that is sex-specific, because those two statements assume some sense of protection that you would think the employee would want and may not?
Sure. So to answer the first part of your question, Your Honor, the less intrusive method is not required, even under the Fourth Amendment. The U.S. Supreme Court addressed that in Voronina, where it held that the school in that case was not required to consider and enact a less intrusive method of specimen collection before it proceeded with urine collection of the student athletes in that case. So the Supreme Court has said that even in the Fourth Amendment standard, which is a heightened standard, what we're dealing with now, that's not the law. The second aspect of your question, why does it matter that there was an independent sex-specific monitor? It matters because the method Sterilite employed was strictly limited to the legitimate business interest of ensuring the integrity of the test. That interest would be frustrated if a manager or a coworker was observing one of their peers perform a urine test under those circumstances. That is what gives rise to an invasion of privacy. Sterilite, in this case, took pains to ensure that did not happen.
So you're saying that an employee employee's privacy is protected if it's an anonymous person? No, you're not even saying anonymous. You're saying a medical lab,
yes,
personnel, as opposed to an employee. But what about with no medical background I mean, this wasn't a gynecologist or a urologist, and they're correct.
Yeah, and I see my time has expired, Your Honor, so I'll finish answering your question, then I'll yield my time to Mr. McCloskey. It matters because, as the Northern District of Ohio recognized in Feliciano, there is a heightened sense of privacy when it comes to having peers observe peers in the workplace performing what is essentially a private function. When there's an independent medical technician performing that same role, the interests of intrusion upon seclusion that were implicated in Feliciano simply don't arise. This is akin to an examination that occurs in medical offices around the country. It's akin to what happens throughout this country every day when the largest employer in the nation, the U.S. Department of Defense, requires all employees to undergo direct observation. With that, Your Honor, I will just simply ask that the court reverse the judgment of the Fifth District and affirm the judgment of the trial court, and I'll yield to Mr. McCloskey. Thank you.
All right. Mr. McCloskey, you have 4.5 minutes saved, and if you want to do any rebuttal, keep that in mind.
Chief Justice O'Connor, Josh McCloskey on behalf of U.S. Health Works. Looks like I will, with 4 minutes left, I'll save a minute for rebuttal. I think from my client's perspective, one thing that initially needs to be pointed out here is that we were hired by Sterilite to perform this drug testing procedure. And Sterilite had us perform this at their behest. So when we're talking about the wrongfulness here, and wrongfulness, I think, is the important element that we need to think about in terms of Hausch, it requires a wrongful intrusion. So as we're evaluating this complaint, the face of the complaint, how do we evaluate that wrongfulness in terms of U.S. Health Works' role in this? So I think as we do that, and we consider the fact that both Norris and Wilcher, Sixth Circuit opinions, both decided that there is no civil liability in this sort of context, along with the fact that my client really went out of its way, as described in the complaint, to make this process as easy as possible. We had the same sex monitor. We were in a room exclusively designated for urine collection. And because of that, this was a procedure that had no wrongful aspect to it. And if we look to the cases, as mentioned by Mr. Roderi, such as Feliciano, Borse, Storms, those cases all involved situations where you had multiple individuals in the same room taking the urine sample, where they went above and beyond what was actually necessary to perform the test. Here, it did not happen. What we had was a single monitor making sure that the sample was unadulterated, not tampered with, there was no substitution, and that was the purpose. Our people were completely professional. You can't even look at the complaint and make any inference that there was any wrongdoing on the part of U.S. Health Works.
Counsel, why is direct observation necessary? Can't you pat down someone to make sure something isn't being brought in? You used your own receptacle,
Your Honor, I think that other methods are possible and possibly effective. However, in this case, the direct observation method, as stated by the Supreme Court in Skinner or in Norris, this is the most effective method of ensuring that the sample will not be adulterated. And it's been approved by both of these courts. Norris and Wilcher both found that this does not involve a liability for intrusion upon seclusion.
Counsel on the other side made the argument that airplane pilots aren't subject to direct observation.
Well, that may be the case. However, again, this is something that has been found to be acceptable for in the context of private employment. So I would say that U.S.
Well, counsel, is there any, isn't the case law just the opposite, that a less intrusive method is not required when the courts are scrutinizing the methods here? The pat-down would be a less intrusive measure of determining the integrity of the process. And the courts have said there is no scrutiny for less intrusive. Is that correct?
I guess I'm not entirely understanding your question, Your Honor, but
there's no obligation to perform a less intrusive method of securing a urine sample. You have direct observation. The pat-down would be a less intrusive. There's no obligation legally to have done a less intrusive method.
No, that's right, Your Honor. There is no obligation to perform a less intrusive method. And both the Sixth Circuit and the Third Circuit, and it looks like I'm just about out of time here, have approved this method. So with that, I would ask that this court reverse the decision of the Fifth District Court of Appeals.
Thank you. Ms. Warhatch?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Madam Chief Justice, I'm David Warhatch, and I represent the appellees in this case, Donna Lunsford, who is here, and Laura Williamson, Peter Griffiths, and Adam Keim. I also want to, before I start, thank the Ohio Employment Lawyers Association for the amicus brief that they provided in this case to provide additional insight into the issues. Chief Justice O'Connor, you raised the question at the very end of the part of the argument for the agent here. You said something about there not being any obligation to perform a less intrusive test, but I would remind you that there is also no obligation to perform a direct observation test, nor is there any right to do so. In fact, what we're here about is whether or not the manner in which the test is performed, manner in which the urine samples are collected, can give rise to a invasion of privacy case in the state of Ohio. This is the context of this case is a Rule 12b6 motion. So that means that all of the allegations in the complaint have been taken as true, and any reasonable inferences that can be drawn from them must be drawn in favor of my clients. And in this case, what we have here is a clear statement that there was a long-standing process at Sterilite of providing a certain way of collecting the urine specimens. And then all of a sudden, they changed without notice to any of the employees. And my clients then went in and found out after they had already signed the consent form that they were going to be subjected to direct observation. I think that a trial court should allow a jury to decide whether or not that offends someone of ordinary sensibilities, particularly in case of the lead plaintiff in this case, who had suffered, who had a vaginal surgery and left her with scarring in the area of her genitalia.
Counsel, is there any evidence that could be presented? Let's say we agree with you. This is a motion to dismiss. We need to let some evidence in. Is there any evidence out there, in your view, that would allow a direct observation method?
I believe it is possible, as we've said in our brief. It is possible if the employer had had some evidence that my clients had tampered with tests in the past.
Would it have to be specific to the person that they're administering the test to?
I think that
they just said, based on the industry, based on what we're saying, is this is the only way we're going to get a good test.
I think that has to be measured against the principles in Hausch. In fact, the question of how the test is performed, I mean how the samples are gathered, could itself create a privacy question. Whether or not my clients had themselves subjected themselves to a need to undergo direct observation to ensure the integrity of the test is one of the factors that could be proved. But across the board, indiscriminate, blanket, arbitrary decision that we're now going to select direct observation only, when there's this great face of, there's this weight of evidence against doing that in the Federal Register and elsewhere. It seems to me that goes and crosses the line. And I think it is up to a jury to make those determinations based on hearing all of the evidence, rather than a trial judge sitting in Stark County saying, under every circumstance, a direct observation is allowed. And let's not forget this. What is really going on here is that the employer has made it clear, appellants in this case have made it clear that their intention is that if you're an at-will employer, you have the unfettered right to decide what method to use. Under any circumstances, it cannot be challenged. And remember, the one thing that was said by learned counsel opposite in the oral argument on behalf of Sterilite.
Counsel, just wait a second. The unfettered right to demand direct observation under circumstances such as what were done here, privacy, same-sex observer, one at a time, that sort of thing, as opposed to the example I think maybe Justice DeWine gave where out in the middle of the, you know, the floor or something. I mean, you made the blanket statement that unfettered.
Yes, that's unfettered. What they want is unfettered discretion to decide the method. And from my perspective,
I just described a method that would not pass muster, and that's in front of all the employees with no privacy protections. Okay? But this was a situation where pains were taken to make sure that there was accommodation for privacy interests. Would you not agree with that?
I do not agree with that. My client did not select the people that watched her. My client, if she were a patient in a doctor's office or in a clinic, would have given consent not only to the procedure that was going to be followed, but also the person that was going to do it.
But that's a this very a total different situation. Stranger. That's a very different situation.
That
the
is a
interests at work here are very different. You have to agree that adulteration of samples is a routine occurrence when people are taking drug tests. Maybe not your clients, but it happens across the board. Correct?
There's no evidence of that in this case. So therefore, the employer had no business making a decision arbitrarily that we're going to subject every one of you to direct observation without notifying the employees ahead of time. What
counsel,
learned counsel...
over here. I want to
yes,
go
sir.
To the complaint. Which is the facts we're,
it is.
We're using. At paragraph 15, you note that they signed some kind of consent to allowing to perform any testing.
Right.
And the other side, your colleagues are arguing no one objected. And there's no evidence, at least in the complaint that I've read, of objection at the time. Isn't that, even if you are right about the allegations, about the fact that there is a cause of action, isn't that a waiver? Isn't that a consent?
A waiver has to be a knowing consent and a voluntary consent. The policy under which this was operated had a specific provision that says that if you do not consent, if you do not go forward, you're fired.
Yeah.
And it also goes on to say that if for some reason under this direct observation method you have shy bladder, and although you've passed every single test before...
2.5 hours, I read it.
Yes.
I read it.
And you can't do it because you don't want someone leering at your genitalia.
But I want to
You're
talk,
fired.
I want you to respond to my question.
It's not
Doesn't the phrase, any testing...
No, sir.
...show waiver?
Testing is the actual... What are you going to do with the urine sample once you collect it? But there was nothing in that consent that said that you also consent to our watching you directly as you produce the specimen. That's collection, not testing. My clients agreed that they can test the sample, but they did not say how you can take it in any way you wish. That consent does not go to the question of a knowing, voluntary waiver because they never disclosed before they signed the form the method.
Okay, well, let's go to my second then, the argument of your colleagues that people didn't object as this was occurring.
My clients did not know as they walked into the room, that this was going to be a different manner. And they were told, if you don't submit to what we say, you're fired. And what I wanted to say before, to what learned counsel opposite said before, saying that there's no legitimate business interest of the employer in doing the kinds of things that we posit could happen if you allow the nose of the camel to be poked in the tent. The remedy, according to learned counsel opposite, is that my clients have to give up their jobs. In other words, if the employer wants to be very intrusive, I want to stare at your genitalia, or I'm going to have someone you don't know do so in order as a condition for you to keep your job, your decision is to quit. That's nothing. Or I guess there's one other thing you could do. If you could quickly get your lawyer on the phone and get a temporary restraining order, maybe you could get at thousands of dollars some sort of remedy in the court. There is a great disparity of power here. And where the Fourth Amendment is not there to protect the employee, that puts the onus on this court to make sure that there's something that is. available to protect the employee in the at-will setting.
Would you agree that this is not a Fourth Amendment case?
This is not a Fourth Amendment case, that's correct. But you don't check your dignity at the door, Your Honor, when you take an at-will employment situation. You're not required to give up all of your financial records, for example, to prove that you are, in fact, a financially worthy person. You're not required to allow somebody to inspect your body out in the middle of the floor. None of that can happen. In the circumstances of this, what they want my clients to do is to check their dignity at the door, and especially the lead plaintiff, who has a problem that's created by the fact she's got permanent scarring in the very area they wanted to gawk at. And she really didn't feel comfortable having some another woman taking the time to look at that. But there's a lot of other things that could go on wrong. Since there was no notice given to my client, there can be no voluntary and knowing waiver of anything. Direct observation was never deployed before this case. It distressed each of my clients. Two of them couldn't even perform the things that they had done before by providing specimens and passing the tests. The direct observation method in this case was applied indiscriminately, arbitrarily, across the board, without there being a nary one bit of evidence indicating that there would have been any compromise or even a threat to compromise.
Is that necessary, that there has to be reasonable suspicion? Remember, it's not a Fourth Amendment case.
Your Honor, it's the fact that it isn't a Fourth Amendment case makes it all the more imperative that this court step in. If you're going to give the employer...
Are we to say that before any employer can employ direct observation method for collecting of samples, there has to be probable cause or reasonable suspicion of the individual that is being tested?
I didn't say that's the sole criterion, Your Honor.
Okay.
I've listed in the brief, and so has the Ohio Employment Lawyers Association in the amicus brief, listed a series of things, factors that could be considered in determining whether it was reasonable to deploy the direct observation method in a particular circumstance. But certain blanket, indiscriminate deployment of direct observation, I think, leaves the employer and its agents open to the possibility of an invasion of privacy case, because the manner could be reasonably considered as offensive to a person of ordinary sensibilities. And that, after all, is the test. I did want to raise, since even though it wasn't raised in oral argument, it was raised in the briefs, by U.S. Health Works. And that question of whether or not this standard here has to be intentional or can negligence by the parties, by the tortfeasors, create liability. There is clearly case law at page 11, footnote 11, of our merit brief that supports the notion that it does not have to be rise to the level of intentional. But I also want to point out that even if you conclude that the restatement of tort second, Restatement Second of Torts, Section 652A or B, requires that it be intentional. Remember that that does not mean it has to be malicious in order to be compensable. In other words, ill will is not an ingredient of the offense. Brandeis, Louis Brandeis, in his Right to Privacy article at 4 Harvard Law Review 193, made it very clear that personal ill will is not an ingredient of the offense any more than the ordinary case of trespass to the person or property. What happened, if you adopt the intentional standard, all that would have to be shown is that they intended to execute the direct observation deployment method. And that's very clear on the record that that's exactly what they intended to do. There has never been any case that requires malice to be a component of that or any form of ill will, and I would urge the court not to adopt that standard in reviewing this case. And lastly, although I'm not so sure it is that critical to the outcome of this case, there's been some discussion in the briefs of whether or not the drug screening programs by private employers are a right or a privilege. And I would say that I took some time yesterday literally reading every one of the cases that was cited by learned counsel opposite, and not one of them talks about it's being a right of the employer. It only talks in terms of it not creating the right to a claim for invasion of privacy just because the test was administered. But nothing has ever said that the manner in which that test is administered itself could create a privacy claim, and that's what this case is all about. There is no unfettered, unconditional, as they said it in their brief, right to conduct a test in any way they wish. And I hope that this court will not be the first in the nation to do that, because that would really create problems for the millions of at-will employees in this state who do not, who work hard and are not expected to subject themselves to having to check their dignity at the door. If the court has no further questions, I'll reserve the last 35 seconds of my time.
Reserve it for what?
Nothing. I'm just.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. You've used your time, gentlemen. You may take 1 minute.
Thank you, Chief Justice O'Connor. I'd like to make one point in conclusion. It is undisputed, both from this court's jurisprudence and the cases of the intermediate appellate courts in this state, that an employer has an undisputed legitimate business interest in conducting drug tests. As the Sixth Circuit held in Norris, if the employer, if the state, has that legitimate interest in conducting the test to begin with, it certainly has the legitimate interest in ensuring the integrity of the test. There is not a single allegation in the complaint before this court alleging that Sterilite or U.S. HealthWorks exceeded the bounds of that legitimate business interest. And for that reason, this court should reverse the judgment of the Fifth District and affirm the decision of the trial court. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision.